Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, psychics, and even Bigfoot. The show is about to begin.
Hello, welcome. Welcome to Paranormal Horizons. This is Sherry Pang. I'm one of your co-hosts, and my other co-host is with me tonight. And Jason, are you there?
Yes, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not bad. It's such a nice day today. I was kind of surprised. We live up here in the Northwest, and we actually had a nice day. I don't remember the last time we actually had a nice day.
It's nice. It's wonderful. Very good. Well, I would like to go, and I'm really excited about introducing our guest tonight. He was a guest probably about a month and a half ago. He is a tarot card reader, and he specializes in the Rider-Waite deck. But also, he's also a witch. So I would love to go and listen and know more about their beliefs and their customs and culture. And I'm just really happy to have him back.
Awesome. Yes, do you want me to go ahead and bring him on?
Sure. We'd like to bring him on. And also, too, for you people listening to us, if you have any questions, you can call in. And there's a call-in number, and you're welcome to call in, and he can answer questions directly.
Yes, the call number is 215-383-3999. That's 215-383-3999. So I'll go ahead and bring Mark on.
Okay.
Hi.
Mark, hey.
How are you, sir?
Live. Good, good, good. Well, I know I'm excited, and I know Sherry's excited to learn about what it is to be a witch, and it is, and I talked to you briefly. It's something I know absolutely nothing about, and we've had 90 episodes on Paranormal Horizons, and I don't recall ever talking about that. So I'm looking forward to you educating us on what a witch is and how that all works.
Sounds great. I'll start off with just a comment. I may have to mute every once in a while. I have a horrible cold, and if I start coughing, I may just disappear for a second, but I'll be right back.
Okay.
Fair enough? Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, my name is Mark Freeman, and I am a witch. Many people try to use other terms like warlock and stuff, things, other words for men within the craft. But it's common that if a person has done the work and done the study and taken the time to make certain commitments to their community, that no matter your gender, you're still simply a witch. When I say simply, it's not quite. Just a little bit of background. Back in 91, 92, my teacher, her name was Michael Sortone, she was my high priestess, she formed a small community, and within that community, there were about 20 to 30 people. By 93, we actually formalized a coven, and over the next 7 years from that point up until about 99 or 2000, we ended up with about 110 people in the community. And that ranges from infants, adolescents, adults, male and female, and the elderly, and all the different points and times in a person's life. So it was a full-fledged, full-on community. And we were what you would call a teaching or a teaching coven. In other words, we just didn't just somebody walk in the door and said, "Well, I'm a witch." it didn't work that way. You had to come to Michael, and you had to ask her and prove to her that you had a true interest in understanding what it was to become a witch and to live the lifestyle that's associated with that. And if she felt that that individual was sincere, then you would start your first year in a day. And that's year in a day, you would wear white robes, and you would have been an apprentice or an initiate. And at that end of that year in a day, you could, with permission from the community, in other words, it's not entirely democratic, but at the same time, all people, it's a family. So you need to be welcomed into that family. So at the end of a year and a day, you could at that point actually call yourself a witch. So you had a full 1 year commitment just to begin with, just to start. Then if you, the next level within a coven, and this is pretty standard amongst any coven, the timelines may be different, but my teacher, she felt that it took a year to become, a year as an apprentice, 1 year wearing black robes as a witch, and if you chose to go on, you could stay at that point, but if you wanted to become a priest or a priestess and have, you know, the responsibilities that would go with that, then it would take another year and a day at a minimum, and then you could wear red robes. And from that point, it would take at least a year to 2 years of more study and more commitment and more, not just to yourself, but to the community, to actually be trained adequately to be able to become what would be referred to as a high priestess or a high priest. And that means that gives you the credentials, if you will, to be able to start your own coven. And maybe I should cover what a coven is. A coven, humans have been paying attention to the earth and the cycles of the earth and forming belief structures and concepts for over 35,000 years. And it ranges anywhere from China to Australia to South America, North America, Europe, Micronesia. I mean, every part of the world, albeit it may be called different things in different languages in different places. Basically, you work to study to understand who you are, yourself. Anybody, do you have a question at this point?
I've got 1,000 questions.
Okay.
I was going to ask you exactly what a coven was. That's one of my questions. The other question I had was, I was kind of curious about how far back becoming a witch goes. But then the other question I had was, are there different kind of witches? Because my only experience with witches is what I see in the movies, which I know is not true. Are there different kind of witches? Are really like white witches and black witches? And I guess that's like a culmination questioner.
Sure. I think I can explain where that concept of a white witch or a black witch comes out of. There are the craft, being able to become a witch, you have to pay attention to the world around you. And basically what that means is that there are 8 special days in the year that are referred to as Sabbaths. And they're about every 6 weeks apart. Some are fixed on, you know, on the solstices and equinoxes. And the balance, the other 4, are that midpoint in between. The reason I say it, and to answer your question, is that each of these 8 days in the year, they honor what's actually happening in the world. You know, in the early spring, you're planting. A little later in the spring, Beltane, that's when, you know, you know, the concept of the goddess and the god, that's when they get together and they have their fertility. You know, they actually mate. There's just so many things to cover. Could you ask your question again? Again, I apologize for having a cold, but my brain's a little fuzzy here.
No, it was a confusing question because it was a question with so many questions in it. Well, let's start one at a time. How far back does modern witchcraft go? I'm aware of, you know, the Salem witch trials and all that, but is there a starting point when people started to follow those concepts?
The concept of witch is actually a European, you know, thing. And the church, the church back during the burning times, if you will, they wandered around all through Europe, and they went out to try to coagulate their power. So they realized that the women in these communities, the women that were the herbalists, the women that were, and generally it was women, especially in that time, and the, you know, the midwives, and I think you get my point. So they wandered around, and it's very, that's where it really shows up, the word witch pronounced is during that period. And that's like from 1000 AD until, you know, the end of, well, really right up until now. Did it start earlier than that? Yes. I would say that the modern concept, the earlier beginnings of the modern concept of what a witch is, started probably plus or minus 2,000 years ago. Like I said, though, when I first started, there have been people paying attention to nature for over 35,000 years, you know, the concept of the goddess and the god and you know, receptivity and assertiveness. All of this stuff is a part of the craft, if you will. Does that help to explain it? I don't have a date where I can say it actually started. The modern concept of witchcraft has been around for thousands of years.
So the witches, as we know it, are associating their power with the earth and, because I think I read a book when I was a lot younger about earth power and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I guess when I think of a witch, I think of magic and spells, and maybe that's probably wrong because I have no idea. Is that kind of the basis for where witches get their powers?
Yes, that's not wrong. But my high priestess, she was of the opinion you could go your entire life and never cast one spell because it's not the spell work. Now, the other word that you brought up was magic. Well, from the perspective of from Satanists to druids to, you know, witches and so on and so on and so on, the concept of good and evil has always permeated it. The concept of a witch, what your basic vow is to do no harm. So you utilize what we would refer to as magic. And magic is actually very simple to understand. It is just utilizing the energy that exists all around you, learning how, through years of study, how to harness that energy, and then to focus it into whatever it is, the work that you're doing for yourself. Because the basic concept of a witch is you are working to understand who you are and how you fit in the universe and how you can be of service to the people around you. You mentioned white magic, if you will, you know, white witches and black witches. The idea of that comes from magic. And magic is magic is magic. It just simply exists. And what we would refer to nowadays probably as a black witch, for example, would be somebody that utilizes magic, utilizes what they've learned about the energies that are around us all the time, and they choose to use it to manipulate situations, manipulate people, to try to make things in the outside world the way they want them. Whereas someone who would look at witchcraft as from like a white witch perspective, again, these are not terms that I generally use, but they are expressive. A white witch is somebody that focuses on their own work and being of service to the community. The reason why Michael, my teacher, why she said you could go your whole life without doing any spell work was because the concept of karma exists. And karma means, you know, the collected, the collection of all the things that you've done, whether they be good or bane, right or wrong, follow laws, don't follow laws. The idea of it is that to do spell work, you are changing something in the outside world. And if you've changed something in the outside world around you, you have caused an effect on the people around you and on the conditions and the things around you. And if you are willing to accept the responsibility of making changes in the world, and that would be collective karma, if you will, then by all means, spell work is acceptable. But from my perspective, I've been trained. I understand how to do spell work. And Michael and I have done a few things in our lives, but it's mostly about protection of ourselves. Again, I'm sorry, it's this cold. I feel like I'm babbling.
No, no.
Anything else?
So basically, you cannot cast negative spells to, say, hurt somebody or to manipulate the outside world without some sort of karmic ramifications. It's going to come back and haunt you, basically.
Yes, that is the basic concept. That's when you refer to metaphysical concepts, I mean, we've all have heard that term. You know, there's certain things, you know, like if you're a card reader, you don't read death because you set somebody up. Sure, you can do that stuff. You can do anything you want to. But you have to remember that there will be a price to be paid for that. So are you willing to accept that price? Are you willing to accept that degree of responsibility to try to change someone or something in someone else's life that they may have bad behaviors or something that they want help with you fixing? So there's two ways of looking at it. You can cast a spell and you can change the situation in that person's life. And I believe that you absolutely can do that. Or you can teach them how to change it themselves, how to pay attention to who they are. And that comes through training that I referred to in the beginning. You know, there's so many things. I mean, just enormous things, amount of things that are there to be learned. I mean, just the basic, simple things of the right side of your body is assertive. It's related to the masculine. The left side of your body is receptive. It's feminine. So you learn how to utilize. In other words, if you want to feel something from someone or feel a tree, you know, because it's hurting and you don't understand why and it's in your yard and you want to fix it if you can, well, you would touch it with your left hand because then you can feel the tree. But if you're going to try to, like, you know, Reiki, and you want to try to fix the tree, granted, you can use both hands, but essentially what happens is that's an assertive act. So you would put energy out towards that tree, if you will. And that would be done through the right side of your body. Other things are like, when I do my work, I wear a little bit of, you know, regalia. I wear a little bit of jewelry. On my right arm, I have two bracelets, and they're mostly amber. And amber is, if you study stones and stuff, amber is receptive. And I wear an amber necklace around my, with a big amber stone around my neck. I don't wear a pentacle. I have from time to time, but I'm not right this minute. And the left side of me, I have two blue necklaces on, and that's because blue is a receptive color. In other words, it's from the West. It represents truth and honesty and water. So when I'm trying to pick up on things from people, then I project myself out through my left side so that I can have a better chance of understanding what it is that I need to say or do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I find it fascinating. You know, I think there's a lot of misconception out there what people think witches are, and
yeah,
probably for the same reason that I, you know, I watch too many movies, and I just see somebody casting bad spells on people, which I'm sure there probably are people that do that, but like you said, there would have to be some sort of karmic repercussion for doing that. But I was wondering, say if you have a witch who wants to do bad things to somebody else, and they cast a negative spell, are there any protections for, say, for lack of a better word, the victim? Or are they just completely receptive to a negative spell just because there's a bad witch that wants to do it? Is there no natural protection from the universe against something like that?
Yes, absolutely. The one thing that I do every time before I sit down and I cast a circle, and I read cards as tarot cards, as Sherry mentioned earlier. So every morning I sit down and I cast a circle at the table that I'm kind of set up on. It's about a 150-year-old oak table, you know, and I've been using it for close to 20 years, using the same table every single day. And I cast a circle. And in the process of casting that circle, I do something that's called clear, center, and ground. So basically what I do is I rub my hands together until I create heat in my hands. Then I run that heat and my hands through my aura. And I think most folks understand an aura is that energy that it's multi-layered, and some of that energy is close to our body, some of it's a little further away, and some of it's a little further away. And it's just that natural energy that every single one of us project. Some people can see them and some can't, but I know that they do exist. So I run my hands down through my aura, and I clean all of that negativity that I just collected, you know, just through life, and I clear that away. That's clearing. And then center is I take both hands with a completely exhaled lungs, and I put them right in front of my heart. And as I inhale, I pull my hands out to the right or to the left because I am searching for my center. And by pulling goo out of the way, I'm left with my center. And then grounding is the concept of there are four directions, north, east, south, and west. And to a witch, these directions are sacred because that's the energy that you pull on to create sacred space, to create a safe environment for you to do your work in. So it's a little difficult to understand, a lot of background. It's actually simple, but it would require more time than we have here now. So I pull in each of those four energies into my body, create like a power cone. And then I combine the energies of the four directions, earth, air, fire, and water, because earth has a certain, that's north, it has a certain construct in the circuit, meaning it's receptive. Air, because that's about thoughts and thinking, and that's fire. And then, it's ideas, thoughts, and things. Then I pull that energy in from the south and bring it down through my body and up each of these. And that's because that's fire and that's passion. And a life without passion isn't a life really worth living, though, is it? Everybody would agree with that, you know. So, and then from the west, or the left of me, if you would, because I always face north when I'm doing my work, I pull in water to me, and I bring it down over me and back up. And the purpose of that is because water represents truth. So earth, air, fire, and water, and then I combine them together with my hands above me, and it creates what you would refer to as ether. In other words, it's a place where spirit can manifest in your everyday moments of life. And I bring that down through me and back up because, you know, like I said, I'm creating a power cone. That is a form of personal protection. And I do that every single time before I start doing any work with anybody. And it can be done easily or very, you know, dramatically. But that's one way. Another thing that you can do, because that's protecting yourself. To protect your home, you do what they would refer to as you take salt. Any salt that's been blessed. So I use kosher salt because, hey, it's already got a blessing. A rabbi has done this thing and he's put a blessing on that salt. So, you know, hey, I'll take all the help I can get.
I didn't even know what kosher salt was until you just explained it right there. I had no idea that was blessed.
Yeah, that's all it is. A rabbi, when they gather it up, he sits and he does a prayer over it, and then they box it up and they ship it up. That's kosher salt. So, you know, you could use holy water if you wanted to too, you know. But salt is a simple thing, a simple way to do it. And you do what's referred to as threshold magic. And you have two silver-colored coins. I generally use dimes. And you start at the north of your house at a threshold. The threshold that faces your north, in my case, it's my basement door. I don't even use it. Not the point. You start north, and then you go east and south and west because it's an invoking energy. It's clockwise. You wouldn't want to go counterclockwise because you're not invoking, you're pushing things away. So you're invoking goodness and kindness in your life. And I spread that salt across that threshold. And I do it three times from east to west or from north to south, depending on the door. And I put those two coins at each of the corners. And that's because those coins have been on my altar. And so they've got a little bit of juice to them. And it helps to hold that boundary that you've created, because by doing that all around your house, what you've done is you've set up safety. In other words, no spirit may pass, nor any crafting, any spell work can pass your threshold unless you invite it in. That's one of the best ways to protect your home. And there's a bunch of other things you could do too, but I think that's the best way I can answer that question. That's personal protection and the protection of a place you choose to live in.
So, with your knowledge of spells and protection, have you any instances or that you can describe to the listeners where you've had some sort of outward manifestation that has benefited you as a result of your witchcraft knowledge?
It benefits me every time I bother to pay attention every day, because that's really what the crafting is about. Crafting is about paying attention to your environment. paying attention to how you're feeling and what you're thinking and what you're putting out for, what you're attracting to yourself, what you're pushing away. In other words, what are you doing in your life? What do you want to create in your life? And by being aware of who you are, where you are, and when you are, you can avoid being hit by a car. You know, you can be aware of the fact that, you know, this lovely human being has just stepped within your energy field. And a lot of times, you know, if you're just walking down the street, right, you know, you just pass by people, you know, and you go around them. But our energy fields, our auras, hit everybody, and theirs hit us. So because of personal protection, like put us in the ground, which I do first thing before I go out in the world, then when I'm walking down the street, many times I'll just strike up a conversation right out of nowhere because I know that that person is a pretty cool, you know, pretty cool guy, a pretty cool, you know, woman. And it living your life in that way, it creates a sense of courage. It creates a sense of ownership, that you own who you are, where you are, and what you are all the time.
And that kind of makes...
Anybody... Oh, please, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, that kind of... That makes sense to me. So you're basically making yourself more sensitive to the world around you in so much as people's energy, which I do believe. I mean, have you ever met somebody that you get a weird vibe from or can't stand, and there's no reason for it whatsoever?
Yeah.
So I totally understand that. But Sherry, what do you what's your take on people with? Do you run into people with, you know, funky energy or?
All the time. I try, and I'm like Mark. I go and grid myself. I have this ritual that I started, and I do it in my car because it's quiet and nobody's around. And I imagine I just place protection around my home and my family and the parameters of my property and my car, and just I just place a big grid of a bubble, big white light, and I just pray to the Creator and ask for a lead of protection, lead around the bubble, and just go from there. So yes, I do. I do my little rituals, and I trust that I am protected and I'm going to be home safely. And I feel that way. It's not a matter of hoping or believing. I just feel that way. Once I go through that and set my intentions, I know that my guardians or whoever are around me, I just go on about my business. So, yeah, it works out. I encounter some negative people, but I just try and stay away. You know, I try to anyway, or try to make the best of it.
No. Sherry mentioned a very important point about belief. Belief has a lot of negative connotations in the sense that, you know, you look at, a Buddhist or a Christian or an Islamic person, and we make these huge assumptions sometimes about how they manifest and what they hold, the values, and that's based on belief and based on what they've read in their holy documents. That doesn't mean it's either right or wrong, and if it's right for them, then so be it. But crafting witchcraft, there are things to learn, but it's not really a belief structure. In other words, there aren't a set of rules like the Ten Commandments, for example. That said, I believe that they have great value. But like the Ten Commandments, they're set rules. Like, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't do this, and you do this, and you do this. Whereas, from a witch's perspective, most, I can say that many of us, maybe most of us, we realize that rules are made for the culture. In other words, laws, rules. They're made for the culture. They're made so that you can have a common way to communicate with someone, because that way it creates a common belief, a common construct. But from a witch's perspective, you try very hard every day not to be living a belief system. But instead, you're learning to pay attention and honoring and trusting that what will come to you is exactly what you need to come to you. It's really not any more complicated than that. I was a part of that coven until about 99, and my teacher, Michael, she became ill. She had genetic disorders, and so we had to break up the coven. But since that point in time, I have been what you would refer to as a solitary. So you can have coven life, or you can live a solitary existence as a solitary witch or a coven witch. And a solitary witch is just somebody who tries to do the very best they can every single day, the same as you do in a coven. But in a coven, you've got a lot of feedback because you are a family. You know, it's that the family creates the village thing, or the village raises the children. You know the term I'm talking about. So you have a tremendous amount more feedback and more input and more perspective and sometimes judgment. But everybody tries to work not to have judgment, but observation. And so in a coven, you have more help, if you will. As a solitary, the responsibility of the work falls on your own shoulders and only on your shoulders. Say, I can't do work for anybody. I can't do their work. It's not possible. But as a witch, with permission, if someone asks me, then I can help them, potentially, to understand who they are and how they're manifesting and why their life is miserable, let's say, or why it's wonderful, and help them.
I have a question. What's the difference between a witch and a pagan?
Nothing, really.
Okay.
A pagan, many people that identify themselves as pagan or neo-pagan, you know, here in this country, they are witches, and they are, whether they're formally recognized it or not, they're still living that same cultural perspective, that same insight, that same desire to understand everything around them
and
take responsibility for themselves. Wiccan is just a form of witchcraft. In other words, if you identify yourself as Wicca, it means that you are, and you shouldn't be unless you are formally a part of Wicca. And Wicca is an actual organization, just like saying Baptist or Methodist. Or you see what I'm saying?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not really. It qualifies as a religion, and so like a lot of military people are involved in Wicca. And a lot of prisoners in jails are involved in Wicca. But it's an actual organization, sometimes more loose than formalized, but it does actually exist out there. There are people that would consider... Go ahead.
I get that feeling that when I approach a person, they say, oh, I'm Wiccan. So I don't get that feeling that they're part of an organization. I feel that their belief system is like a Wiccan, but they could classify themselves, they identify themselves as a Wiccan.
Right, and that's mostly out of lack of understanding of what that word means. And
Thank you. That leads
me to a term that a friend of mine brought up the other day. My cousin and I and Josh, a dear friend of mine, we're going to walk the PCT, Pacific Crest Trail, this summer together. And I don't know where he got the term, if they came up with it or they found it, but they talked about Google witches. Okay? In other words, a Google witch. In other words, how I've always referred to it is somebody who's sat down and they've read one book, maybe two, and they've declared themselves a witch. Okay. Personally, I would have to call BS on that because I studied for years and years and years before I could truly say to myself that I am a witch.
That goes for tarot card readers. You get these people, you know, you get these groups on Facebook, and they just started reading cards, and they're charging money, and they say, I'm a tarot card reader, and they haven't been in the business for not even a year, and they, you know.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that said, don't misunderstand me. If anybody decides that they're a witch, they have every right in the world to do so. But from my perspective, to truly be able to call yourself a witch means that you have dedicated yourself and your life to the care and protection of yourself, your family, your loved ones, and pretty much anybody who asks you, anybody that calls on you. Now, that can be done without casting a single spell. And unfortunately, see, there's a lot of folks, you know, I'll just use the word Google Witch, that think that it's all about casting spells, and they don't know what they're doing. They don't realize how much harm they could very well pull upon themselves. And if anybody does bother to call in, I'm sure I'll get a lot of debate about this one where people will not agree with me. So be it. That's how I see it. That's how I live it.
Now, we do have a caller. Do you want to take a caller? Or?
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
All right. Let's bring this caller from 402 on. Caller, you live on. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, no problem.
I hope this isn't two questions. The first one is you were mentioning about, you know, putting protection around, you know, with the salt or holy water, or I'm so confused about this because if you don't believe in a good and evil or God and Satan, then why would you need holy water that's blessed by God?
Okay.
I mean, it just doesn't fit to me.
I understand what you're saying. And I only mentioned holy water because I don't see it as being something that's necessarily a part of my belief structure. But when you've had thousands and millions of people that believe in a very certain perspective in life, and they live it with such beauty and love and joy, why not utilize that energy in your work? That's why I use kosher salt.
Okay.
Because, hey, I'll take the extra blessings. Why not?
Okay.
You know, I mean, come on. Why not?
Yeah.
I'll take all the help I can get.
Saying, it's not the fact that it was God. It was the fact that they believe it to be. And it has that.
Exactly. And human belief and human thought, a thought is a thing. When you think something or you feel something, it can and does manifest in your world around you. I walked at the Camino here a couple years ago, and I started off in a place called Chartres in this huge basilica because it's all about the Catholics. Of course, it wasn't 3,500 years ago. When it was first put together, it was the Druids. But, you know, that's just history.
Right.
So there was a labyrinth on the floor in the middle of this huge basilica. And I happened to show up there on Fridays when they clear all the chairs out of the way and people get to walk the labyrinth.
Right.
Well, the stones are all brown, except for the labyrinth, which are white. And how I can express to you the value in prayer, no matter if you call it meditation or whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
When you looked at those white stones, there were depressions in the stones right where the feet would touch. Because there had probably been a million people before me walking those same stones. And
wow.
Wow. So it's just another expression of spirit, whether it be Jesus Christ or Muhammad or Zarathustra or Buddha or, you know, on and on and on.
But you don't believe in a negative.
That's correct.
I
do not believe in the devil. Because for me to give power to that will help it to manifest. So I believe in good or bane. I know it sounds like it's semantics. But if you look at the word bane and how it's defined, it means, well, how I define it at least, it defines as someone doing something against someone else because they have something they want and they want to try to get it. Now, you could say that the devil is exactly that. And from a Christian or Catholic in particular perspective, that's how they've set it up. You know, you have good and bad. Well, I don't believe in laws or rules either. They hold no sway for me in the fact that they're there. I have to look at everything I choose to do. If I choose because of whatever circumstance, there's a dog out in the middle of the street and it's been hurt, I can choose to either take that dog to a vet, I can choose to walk away, or I can choose to walk out and break its neck and put it out of its misery. Some people would look at that as being horrible. But for me, I tried to feel what was really needed right there in that time. And I trust my intuition to know that that dog wouldn't have survived. So why not be of service? I may have to pay a price for that. Police officer might pick me up and arrest me. But if I'm willing to pay that price, then I'm free to do whatever I want.
That's confusing to me, too. If there's no evil, then how could you be paying a price or karma or, you know?
Well, karma does anything to do with good and evil. The concept of karma is you do what you do in your life. And when you, like, for example, and many faiths have this, but Catholics, you know, you go to confession and you're forgiven of your sins. Well, from my perspective, I don't care what you've done in your life. You will have to answer for it, period. So I could have killed somebody when I was, you know, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And then I spent the rest of my life trying to make up for it and trying to help people and be of service to the community. And that's great. But I still killed that person. And I'll still have to answer for it.
Right. Well, I don't think that's any different.
You don't?
Catholics feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. You know,
just because you're
Catholic
forgiven doesn't mean you don't have to pay for it.
Fair enough. You know, what is it? You're judged in purgatory, right? And then they decide which way you go, up or down, you know, that kind of thing.
It's a natural law of, you know, what you're saying. You know, there's repercussions, natural repercussions for doing certain things, but that doesn't mean that you weren't forgiven of it, you know, if you were sorry.
I understand that.
But you still have to pay the price.
Yes.
You know, just
but
like karma.
Personally, I don't look outside of me for forgiveness. I don't look to divinity. I don't believe divinity actually exists. That doesn't mean I'm atheist. What I mean is for me, divinity exists within me. I am divine, no more, no less than the other human being. It's
right.
up to me to make the decisions, what I want in my life and how I live it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It's really confusing because, you know, when you're talking about the energy of the universe and the energy, you know, the earth, wind, water, fire, all of those energies, you believe in all of that, but you don't believe in a source of that, I guess, is my,
well,
you know, God. Being the source of those energies.
Yeah, I don't feel that it's, I just don't feel that there has to be someone outside of me that I have to look to or can look to and ask forgiveness from. I believe that I have to look to myself for forgiveness and for understanding. And that's all that I require.
So we've got...
It's a concept that pushes the edge of witchcraft and paganism, but that's where I've gone with it as of late.
We've only got about 8 minutes left, so I'm going to thank you for calling in, caller.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute you.
Thanks
for calling in. And I want to make sure, Mark, that I give you an opportunity to let everyone know how they can get in contact with you.
Oh, sure. I still haven't put my phone number or email address on my webpage, but it's Tarot Guide, www.tarotguide.com. And I'm on Facebook, Mark Freeman, and it's a... Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Mark Stephen Freeman, because there's a lot of Mark Freemans out there. And I also have one, it's referred to as Tarot Guide by Mark Freeman, and that's also a Facebook page. And I don't pass out my actual physical address unless it's, you know, actually requested and someone wants to come visit me. But other than that, I can be reached at dragonfly55@frontier.com. And I'll say it again, dragonfly5555@frontier.com. And that
is
Tarot Guide 3.
It's Tarot Guide, T-A-R-O-T, and it's Guide, correct?
Yeah, Tarot, T-A-R-O-T-G-U-I-D-E 3 at frontier.com.
Wonderful.
So we do have a few minutes, and I think I had a couple more questions. You know, you were talking about, I'm a firm believer in the power of intention, and thoughts are things, and that we do manifest things into our world. I wish personally I could improve my thought process, because maybe that's why things suck so bad right now. But I need to turn that around. But I do believe that, yeah, my life is hell. But
I hear it. We all have our moments, you know.
You got me thinking about it. When you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, my life sucks so hard. Now, maybe I just need to make the conscious effort, because thoughts are things, to start thinking more positive, and then maybe more positive things will happen. But I do believe that. I mean, there's, you know, I believe that there's even some scientific evidence that suggests that our thoughts can have a manifest in the physical on some subatomic level. I don't remember the name of the study, so I'm totally with that.
It's true. Yeah, physics is starting to catch up with metaphysics. Yes, you're absolutely right. They're starting to be able to prove the constructs that witches and earth-based people have been talking about for 10, 20, 30,000 years, and we've always known that they're true because we see them in nature. We experience them in nature. And now scientists are starting to actually prove it. But that doesn't mean there isn't any less magic in it. There isn't any less power in it. It's just we're starting to understand the chemistry, if you will.
And if somebody wants to learn to become a witch and not a Google witch, as you put it, which I thought was funny because back before the internet was super big, you could go to any bookstore and, you know, see a shelf on casting spells and all this. But if somebody wants to be traditional about it and not a Google witch, how do you find these covens? Because I don't see them. I've never seen any advertised. Like, how would you track something like that down?
You know, that's a really good question, and I can only think of one way to tell you right now, and that is if you really want to know about this and you really start living your life as from what you've learned in the books, you know, don't call yourself a witch, but what you've learned in the books, and you start to apply that, they'll show up. They will just simply show up in your life, and I truly believe that. I know it sounds like a crock of bull, you know, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, right, you're just saying it's going to happen, but it does. And if you hang out at your, you know, there aren't many shops around anymore, but metaphysical-based, you know, bookshops, go to the stores where there's crystals are sold, you know, they may not be witches, but I guarantee you that they've heard of this or they've heard of that, and, you know, her best friend Sally, and she's a part of a coven. And so what I would say to you is read, learn all you can. But you need to find a teacher. You need to find somebody that you decide you can trust. And time will tell whether that was well-spent energy or not. But, you know, there's no registry out there. You know, we can go on Google and find a registry and say, these are the good ones and these are the bad ones. You know, meaning they really don't have your best interest at heart. Because if you find a mentor, a teacher, they are going to tell you the most important thing about the craft, and that is you do no harm. You do no harm. If you think about that one, and you're looking at a person to take on as a teacher, are they teaching me to cause harm? Are they trying to control me? Or are they trying to help me to understand who I am so I can find my own path, find my way? Because really, we are all our own best teachers, period.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is I'm going to use another example of how to judge a person, if you will, and I use that word loosely. In other words, I'm a third-degree Reiki person, and I have brought 500 or 600 people to first degree, probably 300 to second, and probably 70 or 80 to third degree. But I do not call myself a Reiki master because that is up to the community to call me a master. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's that same degree of personal understanding and judgment. You will hear of that high priestess that really has her stuff together. If you really want to learn this. And it's not just a momentary commitment. When you get right down to it, you're making a commitment for the balance of your years. And maybe lifetime after lifetime. You know, it's a commitment to honoring and respecting yourself and all the animals and creatures and human beings and rocks and trees as having the right to exist.
And that makes total sense. And, you know, I think there are probably a lot of people out there that like to grant themselves titles, and I think it's a lot more meaningful and powerful when it is handed down from somebody else. Anybody can call themselves, I'm a master. Oh, I got a book on witchcraft, and 3 months later, I'm a master high priest witch.
The equivalent would be, well, I've decided I'm not just a witch, but I'm a high priest or a high priestess. you know, that the purpose of that word, high priestess or high priest, it means that you are capable of actually running the covenant. In other words, you are capable, you have the knowledge and the understanding and the respect for the natural laws and rules of everything around us, metaphysics, that I am willing to risk me and say that I can teach people how to live a better life. So you study to become a high priestess, and you study to become a high priest. But until you step into that role where you decide, okay, I've got the chutzpah to step up and say, I want to be the mentor. I want to be the person that energy is focused around. And if you don't think that is one of the hardest things you'll ever do in your life, because you're constantly challenged between ego and humility, love, trust, faith, respect.
Well, and I have to say that, you know, you've kind of, like I was saying in the beginning of the show, my perception of a witch was what I see in the movies, which is a kind of a negative thing, and now I have a little bit better understanding of it, that it's not always a white and black witch, and and all that. But we are actually out of time, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show once again, Mark Freeman, and sharing what you, sharing listeners what you do, and thank you for coming back on the show.
It's my pleasure. I enjoy speaking with you and with Sherry as well. And
thank
it's great
you,
Mark. Somebody called in.
Thank you.
You
we
betcha, darling.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow for lunch.
Yay, thank you.
All
okay,
right. Darling.
Bye-bye.
You guys
thanks,
be
Mark.
Well.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right, Sherry. Well, I think my host hung up on me. Sherry disconnected. Anyway, what I wanted to say, last few final words. I'm not sure what we have coming next Sunday, but once again, we will be having our Paranormal Horizons show, the usual 10 Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. I want to thank everybody for listening this evening and for the caller that called in. And if anybody would give us a like on the Facebook, that would be appreciated at Paranormal Horizons. Thank everybody for coming, and we will see you next Sunday. Have a great week.